Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We are going on a road trip. Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobert. Today marks the fifth anniversary of the day President George W. Bush stood on the deck of an aircraft carrier under a banner that said, Mission Accomplished. 5 years later, we are still in Iraq, and our troops and Iraqi citizens are still dying in a protracted war. Today we welcome to our Wisconsin Public Radio studios Sammy Rizzulli, a man who has been called by some the Gandhi of Iraq. Sammy has an interesting story. As an Iraqi native who settled in the Midwest, an entrepreneur who owned and operated a successful restaurant business in Minneapolis, who moved back to his homeland following the U.S. invasion in 2004, and who is now working for peace. Sammy started the Muslim Peacemaker Teams using as his model the Christian Peacemaker Teams in an effort to promote peace between the various ethnic and religious groups in his homeland. Following the Route 51 radio show, he will be appearing tonight at St. Anne's Catholic Church on Wausau's west side. Now, as always, we want to hear from you. If you've got a question or comment for Sammy or an opinion on Iraq and U.S. foreign policy, give us a call at 261-6371. That's 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open. Sammy, it is 5 years to the day that President Bush stood on the deck of that aircraft carrier under the banner that said Mission Accomplished and declared that Major Combat Operations has ended. Your reflections on the fact that it's 5 years later and the war goes on.
Well, the same day when we heard that major combat operation was over and we saw that banner, the message on it, that mission was accomplished, everybody said, wow, then George Bush should order his troops to go back. Mission accomplished. Great. What happened? The people of Iraq, the people of the U.S. just waited. Waited and watched. The war gone on as a form of occupation. Until now, as I heard today in the news that we lost another five GIs in Baghdad and the area surrounding Baghdad. Last month marked the fifth anniversary of this occupation and war, when we also learned more than 4,000 young men and women in uniform lost their lives. Beside maimed GIs, the number around 70,000, those are severely wounded, and actually some of them treated badly at Walter Reed, as we heard the news last year. When is going to go this war? And what's the end? While Iraqis also are suffering, and as we hear and learn about the news, more than 1.2 million Iraqis lost their lives.
Well, Sammy, one person who's reflecting on this five-year anniversary is a gentleman named Anthony Kordsman. He's a military expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. He said today that the United States was not prepared for a long-term counterinsurgency, and he said that we will need to maintain a military presence in Iraq for years to come. I'm going to quote him here. Mr. Kordsman said, the war is winnable. It does require patience. I think no one can go to Iraq or Afghanistan without becoming aware that those countries' leaders are talking about a U.S. intervention which will almost certainly, he says, last through the life of the next administration. That's another 8 years.
Well, this administration or the next administration, actually, I don't have any faith on them to end this catastrophic war in both countries.
You have no faith in this administration or the following one.
Well, there is a strong attachment that to the policies and the war strategies that this country has been leading us here in the United States in wars, especially in the Middle East, like we've been witnessing since the creation of the State of Israel in 1948. At least there is a major war in that area every 10 years. Now, the wars are coming closer and closer. And actually, the occupation of Iraq, which took place 5 years ago, it's bringing us to another major, maybe, confrontation with Iran or Syria.
Some would say that we wouldn't have these wars if Israel's neighbors in the Middle East would simply allow it to exist in peace with the other countries that surround it.
Well, let's talk about our brothers and sisters, the Jews, who were living among us in Middle East, in all countries, in the total 22 Arab countries. The Jews were there, and actually, where I live, where I was born, in Najaf, there were Jews living along with the Christian and Muslims. No problem. And let's remember, our father Abraham actually was born in Ur. You are a city north of Basra in the south of the country.
And what
Iraq.
You're saying are that the Jews and Muslims are basically the same people. If
the
you
same
trace
people.
Their ancestral...
Abraham was our father, and there was never any problem between those people as far where they come from or what belief they have.
So why is there a problem now?
It's greed, land, oil, and money. So for the last 60 years, we saw an endless agony of violence. Actually, if we talk about the conflict between the Israelis and Palestinians, it's about land. This is as simply as that. Everybody knows this.
It is about land, but why won't the Palestinians simply recognize Israel's right to exist and say, we'll form our own country, that's the stated policy of the United States, but we're going to stop lobbing rockets and bombs into Israeli territory?
Well, this is an interesting subject to talk about, but I'm invited to talk about Iraq. But since I touched this subject, I just want to say Israel, for those who don't know, doesn't have borders today, and they don't have any constitution, just like any country in the world. Israel was formed not because the Jews were there only, and the Palestinians, Arabs were there, and the Christian Palestinians, Arab were there. Israel, when was established, Jews from all over the world were poured in that piece of land, and that helped to drive Palestinians out of their homes. And today there is a number which is close to the Iraqi refugees in Syria and Lebanon. And in Jordan, there are 4.5 million Palestinian refugees. Also, there is close to 3 million Iraqi refugees in those countries.
I agree with you, Sammy, that we are off topic here, but I just want to wrap things up, take a break, and then start talking about your background in Iraq and the conditions there. Do you see any hope that there will eventually be Israel and a Palestinian state next to Israel, and the two countries and the people within them living in peace?
Definitely. And the question that you asked me, if the Arabs would like to see Israel exist next to them, of course they do. Like, we have the president of the Palestinians, Mahmoud Abbas, who is leading good efforts to establish a solution for the struggle that took us to about 60 years of killing cycle. But the problem is, does Israel accept the Palestinian state? This is the question, which, as I understood, Hamas want to hear this from the Israeli side, if the Israeli side really want and accept a Palestinian state. or existence. Yes.
We're going to switch gears here and get back on topic. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to talk about Sammy's recent experience in Iraq since returning to his homeland, his background in America as a successful Minneapolis restaurant owner, and how he sees the condition of his people now that he has been living among them over the past few years. And we do want to hear from you. Our phone number is 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our guest is Sammy Rizzulli. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
For more information on regional programming for North Central Wisconsin here at Wisconsin Public Radio, or to have your community event listed with us, check out our local website at wpr.org/WLBL.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
It is 16 minutes after 6 o'clock. You are in tune with Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We are talking to Sammy Rizzulli, the man who has been called by some the Gandhi of Iraq. Sammy will be appearing at St. Anne's Catholic Church on Wausau's west side this evening. Sammy, what will you be telling to the audience? What will your presentation be tonight at the church?
I will share what the citizen of this beautiful town, my experiences, as they don't hear stories from right the ground in Iraq, because I'm not an embedded journalist. I'm just an Iraqi American who found himself torn between the conflict that took place 5 years ago. And it became for me a kind of torture that I couldn't live with it. So I decided to go there to form Muslim peacemaker teams, educating people about nonviolence that rooted in the Islamic teaching, remind them that Islam is about peace, to maintain stability and security among the different factions of Iraqi society. And also when I come here, I share my stories with my fellow citizens of America, that I was committed and still to be loyal and faithful, eventually hoping that a stable relationship will end this conflict between both countries. And also I would like to tell them how can we overcome this crisis and what should we do in order to reach out to the Iraqi people, Iraqi communities in a different way of communication.
Now, you founded the Muslim peacemakers using the Christian peacemakers as a model. Tell us about that.
Actually, the Muslim peacemaker teams began early 2005 as a nonviolent response to the violence that has erupted in Iraq since 2003.
And you use the Christian peacemakers?
Personally, I met them coincidentally in the city of Karbala, late 2004. I was not aware of their mission, aware of their organization, but apparently they were there since October 2002. And as soon young men and women from Karbala and Najaf, from a society that an NGO, Iraqi NGO, called the Human Rights Organization, learned about them and established nice, decent relationship with the group. And eventually we were profoundly impressed, admired their work, and decided to form the Muslim peacemaker teams after their model.
Do you find it easier to achieve those goals of creating peaceful conditions as Muslims as opposed to Christians in what is really a predominantly Muslim country?
Well,
does it make it a little bit easier for
it's,
you?
To... Not exactly. It's a Muslim country. We have different faiths in Iraq living together.
I said predominantly.
Predominantly, that's true, but it's painfully to say the Christian percentage of the population of Iraq before the war was about 10%. Now it's going below 3%. Lots of our brothers and sisters, the Christian Iraqis, found themselves also in a difficult situation in the midst of the violence, namely under the occupation conditions for the last 5 years. Remember, the vice president, one of the vice presidents that Saddam Hussein has was Tariq Aziz, and Tariq Aziz was an Iraqi Christian. He is now imprisoned and actually trialed.
He's being threatened with death by the Iraqi regime.
Well, because he was part of the previous regime and many members
so
of...
So this is a story that I think a lot of Americans don't know, is that Iraq's Christian population, the 10% of the country that is Christian, have been hit harder than anybody after the the American troops entered that country.
Well, I remember this pastor from St. Paul who was part of the Christian peacemakers delegates sometimes in Iraq, in Baghdad, when he attended a mass conducted by an Iraqi pastor in a Christian church. He saw those Iraqi people, Christians, in the church. He couldn't believe that when he said, "Wow, I never knew that so many Christians in Iraq in one church." And the pastor turned to him and asked him, "You remember that? You should remember that you're in Mesopotamia, Euphrates and Tigris. They are around you, and you didn't attack a Christian country, but you domesticated it." So meant the perpetrators of launching this kind of war, actually, they targeted themselves before anybody else.
Let's go to the phones. Jackie in Drummond, you're on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Hello, Jackie.
Hi. Yeah, this is so timely. I just had been reflecting on the Iraqi war from a historical perspective after I had read some a story by Sebastian Younger, a war correspondent. And it seems like Iraq has turned from a war to an occupation. And if you think of Algiers, you know, beat France, Vietnam fought us and the French, and Afghanistan outfought the British and the Russians. So I'm thinking that the resistance movement, which seems so all-encompassing in Iraq, has nothing but time to wait us out. And I was wondering if you perceive Iraq more of an occupation and we are fighting a resistance movement, that until we leave, nothing will happen.
Well, I appreciate the question. Of course, the occupation is illegal by all international norms, by Geneva Conventions, by the United Nations Chartered, and the occupation has been resisted by Iraqi nationalists, regardless of their background ethnically or politically or religiously. And we felt here, the administration failed, the occupation forces failed to recognize this resistance. First, actually after May 1st, 2003, when the resistance started targeting the U.S. forces' occupation on the streets and the air and the cities and their military bases, we described them as criminals or remnant of Saddam Hussein. Then the administration ended up calling the resistance as insurgents. And right now, even the word of insurgents, we don't hear it anymore. We hear new terms, calling them by extremist or Al-Qaeda. Why they are extremists? Because they are Shiites from the south, They are not having any contact with Al-Qaeda elements, which we usually blame the Arab or Muslims outsiders.
Oh, Jackie, thanks so much for the phone call. She is hung up, but I want to follow up on what you just said. There is an organization called Al-Qaeda in Iraq, is there not? And that's what John McCain said. Al-Qaeda in Iraq is Al-Qaeda in Iraq. You can't deny that they're operating there.
Personally, I've been there 4 years. I never met a person call himself Al-Qaeda that was organized in Iraq. But Al-Qaeda, first I heard of this term right after the attack on the Twin Towers back in 2001. Then I learned that Al-Qaeda was established, led by bin Laden, backed by CIA and some intelligence element and the royal family of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's going all the way back to the Russian occupation of Afghanistan.
Yes. So those type of Al-Qaeda at that time in the 70s were backed fully by at that time administration of the U.S. Now, the new Al-Qaeda in Iraq, I never heard of this type of people who are extremists trying to inflict some casualties, attacks against the Iraqi people before the 5 years of war, before the 2003, until now. What I learned from the Iraqis for the last 4 years when I was there, that there are about 5% of the Iraqi people decided to resist the occupation forces by force, underground.
But aren't elements from Al-Qaeda among them?
Well,
at least among the Sunni population?
I really don't know, but according to John Murtha, the congressman
from Ohio.
From Ohio, who explained when he vigorously opposed the staying the course policy by the administration. 2 years ago, he made a special trip to Iraq to see what's going on the ground. When he came back, he said there are not more than 1,000 Al-Qaeda elements morally run by Iraqis.
Well, the Al-Qaeda is a Sunni organization, is that correct?
I really don't know, but I know the resistance are all kind of different factions of Iraqis.
To what extent is Iran involved in this? The reason I bring this up is that Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, as we speak, is sending several Shia leaders to Iran, which is a predominantly Shia country, to address what he calls his concerns that Iran is financing and arming the insurgents and maybe even making the roadside bombs that are killing American soldiers.
The information I have, upon the invasion, Iraq became lawless, Iraq became broken, borderless, and most of the, actually all the military weapons storage were stormed, looted, and a matter of fact, the previous regime, since the 2000, the administration of Saddam Hussein realized that the occupation of Iraq is coming. And they, since then, they train their, the army, vast majority of the army to go underground as irregulars. And they had lots of weapons.
They took the weapons from the existing weapons caches,
yes,
which is why we weren't able to find anything.
Correct.
Just kind of hunkered down
for
a long-term occupation.
They were prepared. Yeah. They were prepared to face the U.S. forces, not in a regular classic war, because there is no match between the two forces. The overwhelming power fire that the U.S. has definitely will defeat the Iraqi army, and that's what happened.
Sammy, we've got to take a break, but before we do, and I want to get into your personal story in great detail in the next section of the program after the news break, but do you think it's a good thing that Saddam Hussein is no longer in power?
Well, definitely many of the Iraqi people are glad that the previous regime has gone. But still, there are many people also who right now they miss the days of that regime, which when they compare the agony that they go through right now.
They're glad they're gone, but they wish there was something
correct.
Better in its
yes,
place.
Yes.
Sami Razuli, he is back from Iraq. We'll be taking your phone calls right after this.
Specializing in electric power and mechanical construction services for commercial, industrial, and utility companies throughout the Upper Midwest for over 90 years. Information on the web at hoopercorp.com.
We are back on Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today is Sami Razuli, a Minneapolis businessman who was born in Iraq, moved to America, and then went back to his native country after the U.S. invasion. He is making the rounds in Wisconsin and sharing his stories, his experiences, and his perspective. And if you would like to share your perspective with him, our lines are open at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Sami, we got through the entire first half of the program pretty much talking about the war, about politics. Let's talk about your background. When did you come over here, and how old were you?
Actually, when I left Iraq, I was 24 years old. And at that time, when I decided to leave my country by birth, the previous regime addressed the Iraqis, if you're not with me, you're against me. And I felt like there was no place for me. And I decided to leave.
The previous Iraqi regime?
Regime, yes.
And who was that?
Well, that was led by Ahmed Hassan al-Bekr, who was a cousin of Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was at that time the second powerful man.
And where did you grow up in Iraq?
In Najaf.
In Najaf. What was your childhood like?
Well, it was simple, growing up in a neighborhood. Well, we play just like any child here, and the people.
What did your parents do?
My father was a carpenter. My mother was a housewife, took care of us, raising seven kids. I was the oldest. And I went to school, good students, elementary school, the middle school, and the high school, and college. So,
was your childhood peaceful? Did
no, no, was I was, not. I was, like violent. The violence was, in our, society, not, I mean, a special thing, just like we're connected to all the societies in the globe.
Explain that for me. What do you mean? Your childhood was violent?
Well, in a sense that we always we want to be number one in the neighborhood. There's somebody in the class bullying us, so we would love to protect ourselves. That's therefore we have to defend ourselves by violence. So violence, it's something in the culture there normally. Just as I see my kids here grow up in the school in a violent environment.
In America?
Yes, while they watch violent movies, violent video games. But we didn't have at that time such thing, but it was like grouping in mm-hmm. groups. And it's a fight. You can say within the childhood it was innocent, but it was affected by watching some movies.
Where did your kids grow up? In Minneapolis?
In Minneapolis, yes.
And they had a violent upbringing in a similar way. You're talking about the kind of high school rivalries and fights that people get into. And,
well, not anymore, because I became, my life transformed profoundly here. And I grew up here, and I started seeing things differently. And actually, I would shed some light on 9/12/2001 when I was visited by couple of Jewish ladies who came to me
And what were you doing at the time?
I was scared down and puzzled, paralyzed, and not in the front of the store.
I want to hear the story, but just establish how you got your restaurant business going in Minneapolis. What was it? How successful was it? How did you, as somebody who came here from 24, at the age of 24 from another country, end up being a successful entrepreneur and restaurant owner?
I graduated as a math teacher, and I wanted to be a teacher at the first place when I settled in Minneapolis. I was asked to go back to school, certify my qualifications, and I think that was a policy to protect some Americans teaching jobs. So the requirement were like about 2 years to go back to school. I couldn't afford to do so. So I have a family and I need to support the family. And I ended up opening a little, they call it Oasis, which is also considered a cultural center called Simbad. It's a combination of food establishment, a restaurant, a grocery, and also a bakery in the back.
Sinbad's in Minneapolis, and business was good for you.
It was very good, successful, and we've been written up in many local publications.
You got good reviews in the local magazines.
Yes.
We handed here a copy of Minneapolis St. Paul Ethnic Dining, and there's a picture of Sammy Rizzulli on the front. What are you holding here?
This is pita bread.
Pita bread.
Pita bread, yes, that we make from scratch, handmade. And Sinbad's was the only, actually, bakery in the world make pita bread from scratch by hand, because we believed at the time that Bill Gates, with his computerizing equipment, invaded all those ancient countries where they stopped making
it the authentic way.
And everything became computerized with mass production, which lost the flavor and lost the
Here
real
you are
taste.
On the cover of Minneapolis St. Paul magazine. If you can picture this, you've got you've got a beaming smile. You've got a red apron on, a white shirt, and a red tie, and the hat is
the red fez, traditional fez,
holding a tray full of just wonderful looking bakery products. You're on the cover of this magazine, and that's August of 2001. And 1 month later, your entire life changed.
Well, this is like a celebration I couldn't afford to lose. It was fun. It was not only for myself, for the community, for my family, but it didn't last long.
So it's September 12th, the day after the attack on the World Trade Center.
I didn't want to open my business.
And you're visited by two Jewish ladies.
I was hidden in the back, pretending baking, helping the baker. But about midday, the manager came, and she's a Christian Lebanese, helped me for 17 years running the store with her husband. So at that minute, she said, would you please come with me to the front and see those ladies are in tears? And when I got there, I recognized the faces. Didn't know the names. I welcomed them, asked them to sit down, curious to know what's this all about. And they said, we're here to offer you to come and have a hideout if your life is threatened, because the news are not so good.
They thought that because of the attacks on the World Trade Center, you as an Iraqi and a Muslim would be a target.
Yes, and because I'm so open publicly in my business, everybody knows that Sinbad is an Arab-Muslim operation.
Were you attacked? Did you get...
Never. But their stories that they watched a Mexican guy look like an Arab in New Jersey was attacked and killed. Another guy was Sikh, having turban, non-Muslim in Arizona, also was attacked and killed for reprisal. So they thought of me, and generously they came to offer me a hideout. They gave me a piece of paper with their address and phone number and names, and they said, please, we are your sisters. Don't hesitate, or anybody you think from your community needs a refuge. Our home is yours. And that was awakening call for me, and a transformation for my life, where I thought it was a powerful moment of growth. We should capitalize on this. And at that meeting, we shared food together. We shared thought and our like storming our mm-hmm. brain. Then we came up with something, call it Jewish Muslim dialogue. And we kept meeting once a week, twice a month. Our kids with us, watch us and see what we do.
If only people of all faiths and religious and ethnic backgrounds around the world could meet together and share their experiences in that same spirit. What caused you to go back to Iraq 2 or 3 years later, 2.5 years later in 2004?
As I just mentioned, that experience I never forgot. It was in my head. It was in my subliminal. It was my action. Each a moment of my behavior at that time, always I see those two sisters. And all of a sudden, I'm not scared anymore. I'm not puzzled. And everything cleared up for me. So I felt like all the humanity is one. And to go to Iraq, because I felt the pain, I felt the torture. Being as an American, I am the oppressor. Being as an Iraqi, I am the oppressed. And I couldn't take it anymore. So I decided within 12 months to go back, when I became business free obligations. And when I met those beautiful men and women, the Christian peacemaker teams in Karbala, then I felt my mission was shaped up. My mission was clear for me. And starting with Muslim peacemaker teams right now, we're having a lot of joint project with the Christian mm-hmm. peacemaker teams. Also, here in this country, I have a beautiful letters written by
cards
young,
from children. Did these come from Iraq?
From here. And I brought letters from Iraq too. So these are new things I'm taking with me.
Sammy is handing me a stack of green folded cards from children. These are school children from America. I am 10 years old, and I'm in fourth grade. I wish you don't have to go through this. God loves you, it says. I'm in second grade. I'm 8 years old. I am so sorry that you can't go to school sometimes. We wish you good luck. So this is going to the children in Iraq from the children in America.
Correct. Actually, the young people of this country, the young people of Arab countries, are our faith and our hope to build a new future without violence. Because the grown-ups failed us. The grown-ups led us to a cycle of war that has no end to it. And no faith in the grown-ups, unless it's a dead end. So I turn myself to my kids, your kids, the other kids, and have them to realize that without being stuck to each other, stick to each other, to respect each other, share what we have together. I don't think we have an end to this cycle of hate.
Sammy Rizzulli, we've got about 12 more minutes with him. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'll be taking your phone calls at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. A reminder that Sammy, following this program, will be at St. Anne's Catholic Church on Wausau's west side. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
Get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life, why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatow. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
You've got about 10 minutes left if you want to talk to Sammy Rizzulli, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742, 780-9742. And again, Sammy will be speaking at St. Anne's Catholic Church on Wausau's west side later this evening. So, Sammy, you're involved with this this deal with the cards back and forth. This is Letters for Peace. Is that what you're calling it?
Yes, Letters for Peace. And we have a website could be visited. And actually, you can visit the website at lettersforpeace.pbwiki.com. And we have also another project that we started this year, Water for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
70% of the Iraqi kids cannot access clean drinking water in Iraq due to the destruction of the water treatment plants in Iraq when the campaign of bombing Shakana took place, and continuous bombing up to date in that part of the world.
You told us before that you're happy Saddam Hussein is no longer in charge of the country, but things are not exactly a bed of roses for the Iraqi people today, are they?
Well, we get 2 hours electricity when we don't need it, early in the morning or late at night where we're sleeping. While when Saddam was in power, he managed, after the Gulf War, first Gulf War, a few months by his engineers, technicians, professionals, and others who helped to rebuild the bridges, destroyed bridges, the water treatment plants, the electricity national grid, were about 16 hours electricity a day they enjoyed, the Iraqis. Why he couldn't finish it up to 24 hours a day, because he couldn't import the spare parts that the Iraqi national electrical grid needed.
The Bush administration would tell you that this is because of insurgents, and that they are jeopardizing the nation's recovery, and that therefore it is absolutely essential that American troops stay there until we can provide you with the stability and order that you need in order to secure a safe future for Iraq.
Well, in 2004, James Baker III was able to have donors, international donors, rich countries that to donate up to $18 billion. And also the U.S. Committed itself to donate $20 billion. This is $38 billion were allocated to rebuild Iraq. But the U.S. failed to do so, and the money was disappeared. $8.8 billion were not accounted for when the previous Paul Bremer, who was the civil administrator in Iraq, when he left, that money, close to $9 billion, disappeared. And right now, during the last 4 years, I didn't see anything was rebuilt. Talking about the insurgents, actually, it's because of the occupation. There is resistance targeting the occupation. So, in my view, if the occupation is ended, then will be no insurgents targeting the occupation.
You're saying that we need to pull out.
Yes, and actually, talking about the electricity, I just want to tell you this. El Mseyeb, it's a city between Karbala and Baghdad, where there is a national electrical power in that part of the city, was occupied by the U.S. and used as a barricade, that they uprooted the trees surrounding this grid to cool off this equipment, but the U.S. Chopped away those trees so for protection and security, and that part of the grid is not working.
Sammy, the goal of the United States, it appears, is to develop secular democratic states in the Middle East. You know, we hear the old cliche of Jeffersonian democracy, where all faiths are tolerated, all religions are tolerated, and yet leaders are democratically elected. Yet we find that when people vote, they vote for Islamic fundamentalist countries. And very often, we oppose Islamic fundamentalists by supporting dictators like Saddam Hussein of Iraq, the Shah of Iran, and Pervez Musharraf of Pakistan. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, you mentioned Saddam among those dictators. By the way, he was a secular, and he never cared about who was Sunni or Shia at the time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We support these dictators because we're trying to keep the Islamic fundamentalists out of power.
Right.
And yet when we push for democracy, which is what we're doing in Iraq, the fundamentalists end up getting elected.
Well, right now we have a sectarian government, which led by Nur al-Maliki, who is Shia.
How do you think he's doing?
Well, he's a puppet. I mean, he's doing in okay. What term? In what term?
All right.
Serving the U.S.
You just answered my question.
Right.
Complete
right.
Your thought.
So, al-Maliki agenda to uproot and debathifies the other parties, political parties that oppose his presence, oppose the occupation. So the U.S. and Iraq actually is not leading Iraq to a secular democratic system politically, but they are actually dividing Iraq to sectarians and different backgrounds ethnically by segregating the communities. If you go to Baghdad today, you will see not the 1001 night city that used to be called. It's the city of walls. The city of segregation. It's a ghost town. Communities and communities and communities have been divided by walls as we hear for protection and peace. But when you want peace, you don't impose peace by force. You don't reach out for peace by walls, by bridges you need. But actually, Iraqi population today is... Iraqi population today is displaced. 4.5 million Iraqis are refugees, whether in their country or outside of the country. 5 million Iraqi children are orphans. 7 million Iraqis are under the poverty line. 1 million Iraqis are widowed today with their kids struggling to survive. Therefore, the war in Iraq and the occupation must stop now, because the war is not about victory or defeat. The war in Iraq for both sides is a massive killing and intensive pain.
And once again, the people who are supporting our American troops and even many of the presidential candidates are saying we just can't pull American forces out of there because it's going to make a bad situation worse.
Well, we would love to just enjoy ourselves and entertain ourselves by hypothetical questions.
Sammy, you got to wrap it up in a hurry.
Well,
we're out of time.
This is what we need. If the U.S. administration, I don't care this or the next one, if it's really serious, honest about pulling out of Iraq, they should be responsible first and admit what has done is wrong, and now time to pull out. When they pull out, they have to pressure, either have the government that they installed to pull out with them.
Do you think any of the candidates for president are going to do that?
No.
Sammy?
Maybe two. Ron Paul or Kucinich.
And neither of them are going to get elected.
So I'm not going to vote.
Sammy, we're out of time. This has been a very interesting and provocative hour. Sammy Rizzulli, an American and Iraqi citizen, founder of the Muslim Peacemaker Teams. He will be appearing tonight at St. Anne's Catholic Church on Wausau's west side. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next Thursday, it's Route 51 with a lighter tone. It's time for our annual garden show as we welcome back the always informative and always entertaining David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company of Stevens Point. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our phone screener, Kelson Quisler. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Thanks to all of you for riding along with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.